Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Midnight Ride, episode number 49, and tonight joining me for the first time ever on The Midnight Ride, Mr. Peter Carl. Peter is from thethirdkit.com, a transplanted New England native now living out on the West Coast. Is that right, Peter?
That's true. I'm in God's country, Los Angeles.
Oh man, well, you know, Los Angeles, at the time of this recording, Los Angeles is down 1-0 against New York, so I don't know.
It is.
Which is fine by me, you know, a lot of people make that exodus out west, and they seem to get stuck in that L.A. lifestyle, but you never really can take the New England out of the way, which is why we've got you on the show, because you've been a lifer for the Revs, is that correct?
Actually, it's more or less a later in my life an obsession that grew on me. It was soccer in general when I went to college. So I did become a Revs fan. Actually, it was about 5 years ago, but it's been an obsession to say the least. My brother worked for the Revs.
All right.
As a ticket salesman, so I got to go to a bunch of games in college. Was at the game when Taylor Twellman hit the bike kick. That pretty much.
That was awesome.
That's cemented me, I think.
Yep. I was at that game as well. That was pretty much, you know, I still actually was, I found through my, I was going through some papers earlier today from my old office, and I found the cutout from that, the Boston Globe. I still have the newspaper, so that's pretty awesome. But, yeah, like yourself, I was similar to that. I was, you know, always following the Revs, but really became diehard around the 2005, 2006 time frame, when, you know, they really started to thrive and were playing very good soccer. It was great.
Right. And well, you should keep that cutting, because I'm not sure there's been a bit of more positive press for the Revs since then.
Well, yeah, might as well talk about that, so to speak.
You should frame that.
But, you know, the Revs obviously are having a very dreadful season, so let's, you know, go back to, you know, the game from this past weekend.
Right.
You know, the Revs are playing Seattle Sounders. Again, they get an early lead, and again, it evaporates. And, you know, what was your, you know, initially, you know, we're looking at this as a great moment for our young rising megastar, Mr.
Right.
Diego Fagundes. And then it's all about, why can't this team hold a lead?
It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. And you're right. It was that moment of ecstasy where you're like, holy crap. Diego Fagundes just scored a header, you know, on his first start with the Revs. Like, you know, the sun is rising, and then it's like,
why don't we play him every week? You know, come on. And I think you're right there. It's that, you know, there was an earlier goal that was waved off from
Caraglio.
Ryan
Gutt.
Yeah, Caraglio actually, I don't think, even touched the ball. But Casey Keller ran into him. He was considered to be in an offside position, which replays will say that he wasn't, which is fine. You know, that happens as part of the game. The point is that the Revs then gave up the lead that they had and weren't able to and gave up an early lead, gave up a go-ahead goal early in the second half, and then weren't able to capitalize on what seemed to be a lion's share of the possession just not able to, you know, get themselves out of that hole.
And it all comes down to the defense, which has been the story the entire season.
Oh, my God, it has.
I think we say it every single week. It's just amazing. It's amazing. And we've made some changes to the attack, and at times it seems like, you know, we're pretty coherent in there, and we look like we could compete for a while. And then once that ball gets behind Shalvey Joseph, and then our defense is just, it's more porous than a sponge. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I don't know Well, I mean, I've talked about this on the show many, many times, and you know, there's been a very inconsistent, you know, back line. You know, earlier in the season, we were all very happy with what the back line was doing and what it was capable of doing, with the various pieces that we had. I mean, there were three pretty much consistent pieces in Alston, Cochran, and Soares, and then left back was usually a combination, depending on who was healthy, of basically to start off with was Tierney or Domi, and then sometimes Barnes. Then it became primarily Barnes after Domi left, and Tierney more recently is filled in because the center back situation hasn't been solid.
Exactly.
And Barnes has shifted over and back into the center back position, except for to start off last week, which was Tierney, Alston, and
Cochran.
Tierney, Soares, Cochran, and Alston.
Right.
From left to right. And, you know, I was happy with that, except my one key complaint, and, you know, as much as I think the guy is a veteran leader on the team and is a good locker room presence, and I have to call out the play of Ryan Cochran, and he was responsible for letting out that first goal. It's not the first time he's done that this season. He seems to have he seems to be really good when he's fronting up players. You know, when he steps in and wins the ball that way, but when he can't track back and he can't beat a speedy defender because he just doesn't have the speed. And I look at him as the real kind of the liability in the back line there. And there are other components, which I'll let you talk about if you have other opinions. But for me, it starts with getting a good central combination there with either Soares or Barnes, and maybe not Barnes as a center back. I don't know. I flip-flop on Barnes as a center back. I actually like the way Barnes plays 95% of the time.
I think Barnes is the kind of player. He's very athletic, you know. He's prone to doing some pretty amazing things at times, but he seems to thrive when he's playing with somebody who's kind of like that, more of that stopper, and maybe a veteran leader who can. And I think coming in, when we signed Cochran, he's a guy who has an MLS Cup with the Dynamo.
Yep.
And I thought, you know, wow, we got some experience back there. And then in the second half of the year, he's been shocking. Completely shocking.
Yeah.
It's just like, and he is my main complaint with the defense is why is he playing so much? And he, you're right. He's so slow. He can't track back. Any forward with some speed is going to blow him away. And I personally love AJ Soares. I think he's a great, great rookie. I think he's going to become a really good MLS player. He's going to get his shot with the national team, I believe. But he's still young, and he can't do it all by himself. And you would think that Cochran would be able to fill the hole. But in these two goals, he's the liability. And against Chicago, I think he had some big breakdowns as well, no?
Yeah, and it's just – well, I think he broke down. I think he had to come off the field. But it's he spent a lot of time in the injury bench this year, and he's been concussed a couple of times, I'm convinced, and I'm not sure.
Probably while playing.
Yes.
Probably while on the field.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going on with that, but it's definitely kind of strange what's been happening there. The thing with the rest of the back line, you know, you'll see guys, and Franco Correa is out of position on a number of occasions. Kevin Alston's been out of position on a number of occasions. You know, Chris Tierney's not a natural left back. We don't have a natural left back. That's a recurring theme on this show. I should probably change his name of the show to the natural left back. but the point being is that there's nobody there. And,
I don't think there's any American.
No, it's really tough. It's really tough. I mean, there's been, I don't know if you follow along with Jason Davis and Jared Dubois and Jared, they're starting a show called The Best Soccer Show. They've moved over from American Soccer Show to The Best Soccer Show, which is, American Soccer Show is great. And I listen to that pretty much every week. But they've made a case, Jared especially, being a Galaxy fan, has made a case for Todd Donovan. And week in, week out. But I always bring up the point that we had a natural left back in Cecenovic, and we got rid of him before the season even started. And you have to look at that now as saying, what the heck was that all about? And we've talked about that before on the show as well. So, you know, we don't have Cecenovic. We can lust over him as much as we want. Yeah. And, you know, with time, I think Cecenovic could actually, you know, raise his game level to that of the United States national team. But he's still pretty young as well.
I remember watching Cecenovic, he was a gamer, and he hustled all over the field, and how we would love something like that right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's going to be a key pickup for the Revs in the off season, but they have to lock down another center back, one that's a veteran presence that can, you know, teach AJ Swords and Darius Barnes how to play this game. Because you look at Darius Barnes has been playing on this back line without any real veteran leadership except for Corey Gibbs. And Corey, you know, I think it was pretty clear for Corey when he started here at the beginning of last year that he wasn't going to stay for more than a year, which may or may not have been, you know, a good move for the Revs, considering that he's gone on and scored a few goals for Chicago this year. But he's also somewhat injury prone. You know, obviously he has that lingering knee injury, et cetera. But, you know, you go back to the game against Seattle and you look at all the things that the Revs did right. And then they just seemed to, you know, after the second goal, they really just seemed to kind of lose momentum, and they still had, in my mind, they still had a good, you know, show for themselves and what they could move the ball forward, and they can get it into attacking positions, but they just didn't have the quality to maybe in the final third to put it away.
Right. And that's, like we said, the game was a microcosm of the entire season. And I think with these additions that we've made recently, especially at the end of the transfer window, like I mentioned earlier, the attack is forming with Fauhiber and Zirka. And I love when Tierney gets down on the wing when he plays on the left, because he can throw in such a beautiful ball.
I agree.
That, you know, that attack looks deadly. At times it looks really deadly. And when you throw Shalvey Joseph in there to put a header on the ball, it's like you think this team, if they had that makeup from the start of the season, we'd be fighting for a playoff spot right now.
Absolutely.
And at times against Seattle, we absolutely showed that. But we just – I think after the game, Chris Tierney made some really, really powerful comments about how these players are now just playing for their jobs.
Yes.
For the rest of the season, they're playing for their jobs. And
it's a good attitude to have, actually.
It's amazing. And you have to give all the credit in the world to Tierney for being such a young guy and coming up with such a mature comment like that.
Yeah, and you look at all the guys in the locker room that week in, week out, and I don't know if you've had the chance to spend any time watching them practice or whatever, but Chris Tierney has been probably the most consistent revolution man. You know, when it comes, you know, Steve Nichol asked him at the beginning of the season to sit on the bench and lead the reserves. And he did it. He was the captain of the reserve squad, and that was his role. And he played that beautifully. Mm. I think he really made the most of when Perovic got injured.
Right.
And Marco's out and Domi's out. You need somebody to play on that left side. Nobody's been more consistent on the left side in that midfield position than Chris Tierney. Yeah, he may not be as slow. He may not be as fast as Kenny Mansali. He may not have the finesse that Marko Perović had, but he's got a hell of a leg, and he can whip that ball in from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And he scored a few goals this season on free kicks, which you definitely need him in the squad. So I think if anybody is locked in a position for next year, it's Chris Tierney.
It probably is Chris Tierney.
And probably with a raise. But I'm not I don't make those personnel decisions, fortunately. Unfortunately, I should say. He's a guy that I've seen time in, time out, put in that extra effort. But let's just quickly wrap up on the Seattle game. Was there anything there? I mean, Diego Fagundes obviously running down that, running down all the balls in the corners and stuff, and showing the young legs that he has, and putting in that extra effort, showing that he really wants to be, you know, a first teamer on a consistent basis. Do you think this kid has locked in a spot going forward on the 18?
I think it's more have the revolution locked him into the revolution, because people are going to come asking for him. You know, he is a special kind of soccer player, and we can see that. And there's going to be European clubs knocking on the door. So it's going to become a personnel decision, I think, on whether or not he's the kind of kid you maybe, I mean, he's 16. I don't know. I don't know if you can put a DP thing on him. You can't do that at 16, but he could be the future. And, or does it, it's the decision it comes down to, is he someone you sell and get a ton of money for, and then see if you can bolster the entire squad. But I would love to see him stay on the team. You know, he signed that developmental contract. That is a commitment. When you're that young and you do that, like.
Well, yeah, he's their first homegrown player.
Right.
And so even if they, you know, were to sell him, there's certain, and I'll have to look them up at some point and find out what those rules are around what the homegrown player is. I think they're entitled to extra compensation if the league decides to sell the contract.
And sense.
Yeah, you obviously, I think that if you put in that kind of, you know, you get the, what is the word when you discovery is, you know, you get some compensation for doing the discovery. And I think obviously with Diego, that's a huge, huge pickup for the refs. I think, yeah, but you're right. I do think, considering he's got the Uruguayan connection and whatever, I think that he's more than likely going to follow some of our young prospects that have gone overseas. I just hope that it's not the Freddy Adu, Josie Altidore vagabond path that these guys have taken. Well, and make it more of a keep them here for a little while, let them grow a little bit, and then have them follow the Clint Dempsey path.
Exactly.
Or the Brian McBride path, you know, and let him really develop over here, and so people know what they're going to get. And
he's a very small kid. You can't
deny
that.
He is. He's not even 5'8".
You're right.
He is tiny.
He must weigh about 150 pounds. Not even.
Probably. I'd say probably 125, maybe. his legs probably weigh 100 pounds, and the rest of them.
Plainly put, this is the only league where he can go up for a header and score on Casey Keller. So
exactly. And he got a little help from the crossbar, but he got the right side of it. So
right. Mohawk too, but
yeah, he definitely put himself in a position there. But you know, Diego for me was definitely the shining star of the revolution on Saturday, and then obviously the defense was the big, you know, skid mark of the team, I should say. I can't think of a better word to describe.
I think that's pretty apt.
But you know what? Let's without getting too much more into Saturday's game, why don't we take a break? We'll come back and we'll talk about the upcoming game against San Jose, and we'll take a closer look at who we may think is going to stick around next season, who's going to go. We'll play around with that for a minute. So stick around. We'll be right back after this. Magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight.
This is Danny Beerstein, founder of the Free Beer Movement. Help us build American soccer one beer at a time by visiting www.thefreebeermovement.com. It's American soccer culture with a nice buzz.
This is Darius Barnes, and you're listening to The Midnight Ride.
Bebete Vambora, pois já está na hora.
And we're back on the Midnight Ride with Peter Carl from thirdkit.com. And Peter, you and I are talking in the break a little bit about some of your past work. And let's talk a little bit about it now, because you've had the opportunity to, and I think a lot of people have read it. It was a very good interview with Shari Joseph, and really showed us the insight as to what, you know, may or may not be going on with Shari next season. So when we talk about players who are going to be maybe coming back, I mean, the biggest question mark on the Revs roster is Shari Joseph.
Of course.
So, I mean, given that you know, from your interview and from, you know, following the team and given Shari's salary status where it is right now, I mean, shy, you know, unless the Revs, in my opinion, make him a designated player at age 32,
33. Yeah, 32.
And if they make him a DP just to keep him on the roster, which I don't necessarily believe will happen, do you think that the Revs are going to pony up the money to keep Shari on this team?
It's going to be really interesting. And you know what? Part of me thinks that for two reasons, it's better that they don't. One, for the Revs, it's a lot of money they can spend to bolster the entire team, because for so long Shari's just been the pillar of the team.
Right.
You know, and maybe if they take that money and they kind of spread it out across the team, we'll just have a better collective group on the field.
A better defensive line.
Yeah. And then the other part of it is for Shari, because, you know, speaking to him, I pretty much had sympathy. Just, and I mean, if you look at the guy's career, you can't help but have sympathy. His career's kind of been under arrest with the Revs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been there over 10 years.
Well, you got to think back to 2006, 2007, when, you know, he was being wooed by Celtic.
Right. And there was, he got offered, the MLS got offered $1 million 1 year,
yep,
$2 million the next. They rejected both offers. It's been the man's dream to play soccer in Europe. And I think all of us have seen him play enough to know that he would have excelled. He would have excelled in Europe, you know,
yeah,
in a defensive midfield role, in especially in the Scottish league.
Yes,
he would have been great. It would have been a great thing to see more than anything. But he's 32 years old, and what he said to me was that he's lucky enough that his body is held up for him, where he can play for another 3 or 4 more years, especially in the MLS. And he's had such a great career in this league that it would pain me to see him end it in New England, you know, because you know that New England's not going to have a stadium in the next 4 years.
Right.
And what he said was, I want to go out with a stadium full of fans chanting my name. And as much as he says he loves Boston, which I don't know why anybody wouldn't love Boston, amazing city, he's not going to get that at the Revs. And maybe it's a place, maybe it's Portland, maybe it's Vancouver, somewhere like that, that could definitely use a player like Shari. But, I mean, he said in the interview, I don't want to fall through the cracks like Jay Heaps did.
Right.
And Jay Heaps is a great player and a good friend of his. But if you think about
it. And a guy who's been very loyal to the Revolution.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And that kind of did happen to Jay Heaps. He deserved a lot more credit the way his career ended. And I know, I mean, Shari's a guy. He when he was very young, he declared for the Granada national team.
Right.
He very well could have refrained from doing that, you know, and he would have, he'd be in camp right now in Miami, you know, he'd be playing for the U.S. national team right now.
Yes.
And that's what he said is one of the biggest regrets of his career, and maybe his only regret.
Yep, I think that would have to be. And I think, you know, you look at prospective markets, we have to remember that Shari actually grew up, went to school in the New York area.
Yeah.
And there's talk of at another team coming into the New York area. being that 20th expansion team for the league. But also, you know, you look at a team like in the next year.
Yeah.
Who is going to need a defensive midfielder? And you got to look at New York. I mean, the Red Bulls need a player to come in there and kind of shore up that middle of the league. Now, Shaari, as much as I respect his entire career and all this stuff, I don't think he was the player that he is. I don't think he is the player now that he was 2 years ago. I think he may have lost a step or two, and that could be just the doldrums of New England affecting him. And saying, right. You know, where's my backup? Where's my support? Oh, yeah, he's in Colorado. and he's playing for the Rapids now, and I don't have that guy anymore.
And he has an MLS Cup.
And he has an MLS Cup, exactly. But so Shaari hasn't formed that partnership with anybody yet. You're starting to see that a little bit with Benny, but Benny is playing in a more aggressive role as well. And there's really kind of almost a void behind them now where Shaari has to kind of circle back and be that stopper that Jeff was for Shaari.
Yeah.
And now Shaari has to be that stopper for Benny. And I don't know. I think that in a midfield, maybe with Dax McCarty, that might be a very good and effective combination for New York. We'll have to see. And then Rafa Márquez is not coming back.
Absolutely not. So, after what he said. Yeah. But I know this isn't – we're not in the city of Liverpool, England, where going from Liverpool to Everton would, you know – it would create Armageddon in that city. And that's what, you know, on a much more minor scale going from New England to the Red Bulls is going to play for a rival. And I wonder if Shaari is loyal enough to the Reds where that's something he wouldn't want to do. I highly doubt that. It is his home city. And if he got the opportunity to play in New York, why wouldn't he take it? And I don't know. I could see him going somewhere in the Northwest, to be honest with you. But the only thing that surprises me so much, Hank, is that his contract's up after the end of the season, and if they don't sell him, they're not going to get any money.
Well, they can't sell him now.
Oh, they can't sell him now, which surprised me so much at the end of the transfer window. I really thought there could have been a move. It could have been a move and Shaari on his way out.
Right.
But that didn't happen. It would surprise me if he was in New England next year, and I don't think I would be too bitter about that.
Right.
For his,
For his sake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And as I said, you know, I think the team definitely relies on him way too much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And all right, well, given the fact that, you know, Shaari, I mean, this team has relied on Shaari for so long, and I think it's kind of maybe holding the team back. We talked about, you know, a little bit about that, but other elements of this team obviously need to change as well. And, you know, you've got basically a stable full of rookies that didn't really see the field at all this year.
Right.
And, you know, guys like Alan Coger, Ryan Kinney, Andrew Sousa. Yeah, those three. I mean, then McCarty got a lot of play, and we can't forget that he's, you know, he's probably likely to come back and after shoulder surgery, or whatever, and play for this team. My guess is that, if for some reason they decide to keep Pat Phelan, that McCarty and Phelan will end up being the starters for next season. I personally wouldn't be. I'm not sure what Pat Phelan's contract status is, but I wouldn't be heartbroken to see Pat Phelan go.
I don't think many would be.
Yeah, just from what he contributes on the field. I mean, the guy works his butt off out there. It doesn't seem to really get anywhere. And
it's like they thought he was going to be
Jeff Lorenowitz.
Exactly, with the red hair and everything, even. But yeah, not quite.
Yep, and that's. That's the sad part is that, you know, and since now had 7 concussions or something along those lines in his career. And you've got to think about, you know, if Taylor Twellman is retired at age 30, what's going to happen with, Pat Phelan, if he gets one more concussion, is that something that the Revs want to take on? I don't know if that's, I don't want to make excuses for getting rid of him. I think that the Revs can do better in defensive midfield position. And I think they should look for a better defensive midfielder. I don't know if Steve McCarthy is that guy or not. I think that he has potential to be that guy in the right circumstances with a tutor such as Shari Joseph teaching him. But, one half season working with Shari, and now he's on the sidelines. I don't even think he's here, to be honest. I think he's recuperating down in North Carolina or Texas wherever he's from. And I think he's not even getting the benefits of being around the team. But my point being, they can do better in the defensive midfield position. Any other spots where, you think that they could do better? Obviously, for me, I think it's maybe a left back, right back positions definitely need attention.
I think the defensive line, if that's not the top priority, for Michael Burns once this season ends, that would be ridiculous, because that's been the downfall of the team for the entire season. And I mean, with Zirka on the right, and I always was a fan of Kenny Mansali, but patience running thin with him. I mean, it's been a while since he really showed what we thought he was going to be. I we could use another attacking option. I really do like Caraglio, but I don't know about Lekic.
Yeah.
What is your opinion of Lekic? Because he seems like he's a goal scorer. He's the kind of guy who will score goals, but he doesn't bring much dynamic to your attack. He doesn't contribute too much to an attack. When Caraglio got on the scene, Lekic seemed to come alive a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's because Caraglio can hold up the ball a bit, and then Lekic's strength is, getting free inside the box where he can make a play on a ball or a rebound or something along those lines. I don't think it's Lekic was being asked to hold up that ball, be that hold up man, which he just wasn't his game. So I think he's a good complement to Caraglio. I think he'd be an excellent option off the bench if they were to bring in another attacker. That maybe works along with Caraglio. I think Caraglio needs to get into better shape.
I agree with you.
When you're talking to him face to face in the locker room, he's very fit. But you can see him on the field. He's just his body language is down. He's dragging it, and especially later in the games, he's walking back into an onside position. Sorry, buddy. I'm sorry.
No,
if you're down a goal, you need to run back and get in an onside position.
Not to mention considering how much money he's being paid.
Yeah. Well, what does it say on the sheet there?
Oh, it isn't much at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
I thought he was guaranteed much more as the DP.
Yeah. That's a very misleading. It's a very interesting contract, shall we say.
Yeah. This is surprising to me.
Yeah. What was the number? Something ridiculously small.
It's like 50, really 20, small.
26, something?
54.
54?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're paying our designated player $54,000 a year guaranteed salary this year.
So is that – I mean, that must be, you get here so late in the season, prove to us that you're going to be a gamer, you're going to be a player, you're going to score some goals, and then next year they're going to rocket it up a lot, right?
Apparently that contract has got so many options in it that it's got, loophole after loophole after loophole. For, if Milton doesn't like it here, if the team wants to bring him back, if New England wants to bring him back, everybody's got options that they can exercise, at various levels of the contract. So
I think they bring him back.
I think they bring him back if they can. Absolutely. I think if he wants to come back is the question.
Right.
Does he want to go back to Argentina and prove that he can play down there in the off season? And, you know, maybe there's an option for him to say, okay, you know, I'll let you guys know by February if I'm coming back or not, which would stink for the Revs because you would think that he would need January to sign somebody from England or something along those lines. But anyway, that's an interesting scenario there. So if they can bring him back, definitely. Lekic I would bring back as well. But let's talk about some of the other – I mean, Zach Schalosky, he hasn't really shown much in this system.
No.
And I think maybe in a different system he would show more. But again, he's a rookie last season that was asked to really carry a lot of that weight early in the season without having any help.
He's a bench. He's an MLS player through and through, U.S. Open Cup kind of guy who happens to look like a drunken Paul Giamatti all the time. That's what I think of him. And I do – I think I went to a game at Gillette when he scored 2 goals in one of those rare home wins last year.
Yeah.
But and I was like, wow, what is look at this guy? He can finish.
Yeah. He did a great job too.
That's really been – so –
Yeah, it hasn't really been there for him, which has been kind of tough on everybody. It's, you know, because there's high hopes for him, but so I don't know if they keep him is my point. I mean, do you keep him on the bench and then you know you have other guys that you haven't even seen this year really play, and you know and Zach might be that type of guy that ends up being like Adam Christman. You know, 3 or 4 years down the road, he hooks up with another team. And he's a great bench player he's a good bench player for a great team like LA Galaxy. So, yeah, a little feedback on your own there.
Really, I think my headphone. Hold on.
Yep. All right. So anyway, yeah, we're good. Yeah, it's good. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Good. All right. So who else on the team, you know, will give me a couple more guys that you think will make it back, definite locks, and then who would you like to see go? And then we'll take another break.
Well, I think I'd like to see Kelly Dubé go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's getting paid $90,000, and for what, honestly? I think he's a – you know, he had those whiplash problems and all that, but he's never really settled in. I do like signing, and, you know, if he has any – his brother's play is any indication of what he might be – he might have the potential to do, then maybe he's worth keeping. But obviously you don't – that's not something you sign a player for or anything. But he's never really been a player that has – you know, you're not throwing your hands up in the air about Saniniasi all that much. Like he's kind of a spark plug. He's got good speed. He can get on that wing, and he creates sometimes, and that's what we need. But is there a spot with him with Zirka on the team now? What do you think with Saniniasi?
That's a very good question. I actually don't think there is a spot for him on this team. I think that he's a failed experiment at this point. I actually remember the first time he played for the Revs was in an Open Cup semifinal match, which was being played in New Britain, Connecticut, against the Railhawks, I believe. And he was on fire in that game. He came in as a sub, and you know, the Revs, it was a tie game in extra time, and he came in, and he was flying all over there. He wanted to play so badly. And he ran around that defense faster than anybody could imagine. And we were all very, very excited at that point. But, you know, he is a one-trick pony. And and people have caught on to him now. And he hasn't been able to develop that extra element of his game where he can run at defenses with the ball and be an effective, you know, wing player or an attacking midfielder. I'd actually like to see him as a forward. And see if he, you know, can burn defenses with his speed that way. You know, similar to the way that, you know, Dominic Aduro runs at defenses or like he did against the Revolution.
Exactly.
Well, all right. You know what? Go ahead. One more.
My question for you actually was that we're talking about players, but I believe
Mr. Steve Nichols' contract is up at the end of the season, isn't it?
It sure is.
So we don't know if he's going to be back, and then that's going to create a whole new, you know, dynamic to the team and what we're going to see next year. I mean, I don't even know who they could get. What coach wants to come to New England? What coach wants to play for at Gillette Stadium, or wants to coach at Gillette Stadium? You know, one of two teams that don't have a soccer specific stadium in this league.
Right.
It's a hard sell. That's for sure.
It really is. It really is, especially with the ownership group the way it is right now. But you know, let's take a break. We come back, we'll wrap it up, and you can talk about Shari Joseph's little kind of protege, and we'll talk about maybe we'll get who we want to come in as a potential replacement for Steve Nichols. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right, we're back to wrap up the final segment. I'm here, Hank Alexander, that's me, here with Peter Carl from thethirdkit.com. And that's www.thirdkit.com. Leave the T-H-E out. And
right.
You'll see that stuff there. Peter, you and I were talking earlier about you know, how it all worked for you to get that interview with Shari Joseph, and it started with kind of this contact through this youth player for the Revolution.
Right, yeah. I mean, as we were talking about earlier about Diego scoring and the how positive everything is around the developmental academy in New England, and we do have some pretty damn good players in that academy. One of which is this kid Zachary Haraview. I don't know if I even pronounced his name right.
Haraview, I think. Haraview. But
well, you're well versed in Haitian.
It's a French last name. It's a curse.
Oh. Well, I'm an idiot. So yeah, Zach's father is best friend with Shari.
I gotcha.
And he's this young guy, young kid from Brookline, who he looks, if you see him play, he looks a lot like Ronaldinho. Not because he plays like Ronaldinho, but he's got like the big mouth and the long bushy hair. And growing up, he's considered like a little. People used to see him like, look at that little mini Ronaldinho, mini Ronaldinho. So
that's fine.
Where I work at a news agency, we tried to sell a story to some newspapers, tabloids in the UK about. The story about the mini Ronaldinho, because they eat that thing up. Nobody wanted it, naturally. It was a terrible idea. But I was like, you know, this is a great story about a kid in Brookline who's going to get, you know, he was practicing with the boys' national team. So went and met him, spoke to his family, spoke to Shalri, got some great quotes on the kid, and the piece ran in the Boston Herald. But he's quite an intriguing kid because he trialed with Sporting Lisbon in Portugal. Wow. And yeah, and the guy who discovered him was the same guy who discovered Cristiano Ronaldo. So this kid came, you know, highly, highly touted, and he went to Portugal, he trialed, and they wanted to keep him. But his father was like, listen, I can't live in Portugal with my whole family right now, blah, blah, blah. So they came. Massachusetts. Shari took him under his wing, and he's been playing with the development academy with the Revs. But unlike Diego, who signed that developmental contract, and he's pretty much locked in the MLS, Zach won't do it. Zach doesn't want to play in the MLS. And Zach wants to play in Europe, and that's his dream. And I think that Shalri is kind of, you know, he's kind of guiding him in that, right? Because Shalri knows what it's like.
Yep.
to be held down by the MLS. But you won't see him in a game or anything like that, but
yep,
he's a kid to keep track of, that's for sure.
Okay, yeah, absolutely, guys, check it out. This kid's name is Zachary Herivaux. It's Herivaux. He's on YouTube. You Google him, you'll find these articles on him. He looks to be the real deal. If the one thing that might get him to stick around is if the Revolutions start to change their style of play a little bit more and be a bit more competitive, and you know, kind of join the new wave of MLS. And I think in order to do that, I think they're going to need to make a change in the coaching staff. And you know, I've been a champion of Steve Nichol for many, many years, and I don't think the Revolution are ready to give up on him, just because I think that's the way the Kraft has found something that he likes and he can work with it. And that's why Michael Burns is still the director of, or the VP of player personnel and technical director or whatever. Because I think the Kraft family is happy with the status quo the way it is. They've made the Kraft family's made great strides this year in their minds, the Revolution, because they've got a shirt sponsor, they've signed a designated player, and they've got a homegrown player. I mean, it's been a year first for the Revolution. The only thing they still don't have is a banner that says "We're the MLS champs." And
Boston loves its champions. You're not going to be a notable team in that city without.
That's the truth. That's the truth. So. What kind of, there's so many potential, you know, names we could throw in around here, but what do you think, in your opinion, what would work better in coming into the MLS, coming into a situation like New England? Would a manager that's been on, you know, had some moderate success in Europe, but without a team coming in here, somebody like Hans Bacca, maybe a retread of an older coach that's been around, you know, the NASL or USL, somebody like Tater Thorvaldsen, I think his name was the guy that they just released from Vancouver earlier this season. Or do you go to the coaches, you know, and I'm just going to say somebody like Caleb Porter, you know, somebody, you know, from the college ranks. What do you think would work better in a situation like the Revs?
Well, I think what we need to find is someone who. It's so difficult because I, just like you said, you're a champion of Steve Nichol. I can't even think of the Revs without Steve Nichol.
Right.
It's so difficult, but you're right. A change might be in order, and maybe it is somebody. I think it is somebody who's had a success. In the MLS and knows how to turn a team around, maybe somebody who's made something out of nothing before in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, my knowledge of MLS managers is really not that extensive, to be honest with you. But maybe someone young and energetic like Kobe Jones.
I mean,
he's kind of a California guy,
and he's got connections now with the New York Cosmos.
Yeah, you're right. He does.
But, you know, that's the kind of guy I think they need. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't want to see...
you don't want to see Rude Gillett coming out.
You definitely don't want to see Rude Gillett. But you also, I mean, if you're going to bring... Somebody like Kobe Jones would be an excellent choice because he's kind of got that cachet at that, you know, that at that international level because he's played for the United States national team. He was very well known in certain circles. People in L.A. know him. They love him. People in New York know him, and they love him. He could bring that kind of credibility as a coach. I think, you know, if you maybe go to the assistant coach route, you know, like maybe you get somebody. I'm not saying this is the guy, but maybe you get somebody like Steve Ralston who's got a couple of years as an assistant coach under his belt and, you know, is well-respected in the league as was a well-respected player as Ben Olsen was. You know, and you look at Ben Olsen's down on the verge of making the playoffs.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that idea.
That's a great idea. But for Steve to be a success, I think you need to change the front office behind him.
Oh, 100%. I think that's what all of us fans want to see happen and see the front office change. I got an intriguing question. I mean, I know you're a Revs lover, a huge fan, but say for in some crazy, crazy hypothetical circumstance, an MLS team, you know, sprung out of the ground in Boston, like Boston FC, mm-hmm. in that inner city. How hard is it for you to maintain your ties to the New England Revolution?
Not hard at all. I mean, I support New England Revolution. I'm a big fan of them. I've loved watching them play. It pains me when they play poorly. But, you know, if there's another team that pops up inside of Boston, right in the middle of the city, it's, yeah. you know, I'm going to be 100% behind that team because I want that team to succeed. I want right. the I want the my team to be playing in Boston. And I think, A, because there's more soccer culture around Boston than people realize. I drive to work every day this past summer, and I'm seeing kids from the inner cities of Dorchester, Roxbury. They're walking down the street with their soccer ball in one hand and their cleats in the other. And they're going to play on a turf field. They're going to play on a dirt pitch, whatever they're going to play on. But it is everywhere around this city. And I am constantly amazed. You know, I work in where I work. There's this huge empty convention center called the Bayside Expo Center. And it's empty. And I did actually a little cutout. I cut out the shape of from a 500-foot angle on Google Maps, 500-foot elevation. I cut out Liv Strong Park, and it fits almost perfectly right on top of the Bayside Expo wow. Center.
So, whereabouts in Boston is that located?
Bayside Expo Center is right on the red line of next to the water, by JFK UMass.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I know that area. I'm surprised. I don't know the Bayside.
Well, it's been closed for about 6 or 7 years and it hasn't been used, but it's literally empty.
Right. And then there's talk of Somerville and all, yeah. and like I have a friend who has a condo right in Somerville and the industrial park is right blocks away where they're thinking about extending the green line and whatnot. But like, I love Boston. Like I moved to LA and I don't know if it was the greatest decision, but once moving away, I realized how amazing that city is. And I knew it while I was there, but being such a soccer fan and having to drive that 45 minutes to Gillette Stadium anytime there was a game,
yeah,
it's draining. And I want nothing more than the Revs to move into Boston and not for there to be a Boston FC, because the Revs do have that, you know, that history.
That would be my first choice. That would be my very, very first choice. But if the Crafts think that people are going to just go out there because that's where the soccer is, they should have woken up and smelled the coffee a long time ago. Because the fans have not been coming. Hey, every time I am blown away every time Brazil comes to play. Every time, I mean, it's like going to the Super Bowl. You know, it's
yeah.
If you've gone to a Patriots game at Gillette Stadium, you'll know what I'm talking about, because Route 1 is just jam-packed all the way through. Brazil yeah. comes to town, it's the same way, except people are screaming out of their cars and swinging flags and basically doing the samba on the rooftops as they're sitting in traffic. It is an amazing party when Brazil comes to town. And I think, you know, the Revolution may be deluding themselves and saying that they can get by on that crowd alone. And I don't think they expect that crowd to come to Gillette Stadium for the Revs games. But I think that as long as they continue to have soccer there, you know, they can say, hey, yeah, we have a soccer facility. We have the Revolution here. We'll host Brazil versus whoever. Right. And they'll be able to keep drawing that money in. And that's the real moneymaker for them. Obviously, right. the Patriots are the real moneymaker for them. And now they're trying to just leverage their investment on the stadium and as well as Patriot Place. But, you know what? We're running really late. So we are.
Okay.
Okay. So sorry. It's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. It is good conversation. So it's definitely worth talking about. But you know, it is a very good topic and one that is dear, near and dear to everybody's heart is about what's going to happen with the Soccer Specific Stadium.
We'll have another one of these by at the end of the season, I think. That'd be good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so, Peter, we've got San Jose coming into town. We haven't really talked about that. You know, they've got something like they've got 31 points, or excuse me, 32 points, having played 31 games. Long shot to – well, New York just won, so they are technically out of the playoffs. You know, but they've got some they don't have too many injuries. Chris Wondolowski has scored 12 goals for them this season.
Yeah, he is.
He's looking healthy. I think Steven Lenhardt is still out on family leave. I don't know if he'll be back for the game on Saturday.
And I don't think Bunbury will be there because he will be with the national team.
But he plays for Kansas City, doesn't he?
Oh, my gosh.
That's all right.
I'm getting the colors mixed up right now. That's how late we've run with this conversation.
Right, right. Well, it's, I do think they did have Ryan Johnson earlier in the season. He's now been traded. I think he plays for Toronto, but I'm not sure on that. Let me see. Yeah, he's with Toronto now, and he's a guy that actually is from Boston, and I would love to see him come back and play for the Revs. That would be good.
Yeah.
But anyway,
boys. But yeah, I think against San Jose, like Tierney said, it's just they're playing for their jobs, and I'd be surprised if we didn't see, you know, a pretty hustle effort from the Rebs, especially in front of the. It's at home. It's in Gillette, right?
It's at Gillette. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I mean, you're not playing for the playoffs, but you're playing to salvage quite a few things. One, your pride. Two, those fans that do go to the game, there might not be very many, but in these last three games, you need to prove to them something that next year they have some sort of team to go. They're going to see some team that's going to compete next season. Because if you roll over and you get beat 4-0 these next three games, that's going to put a even larger dent in what they turn over for next year.
Right. And it's actually, you know, you make a good point, but it's actually only two more home games. It's this one. And then on Saturday, October 15th, is the last home game of the season against Columbus Crew. And that's really the last chance that they're going to have to perform in front of their hometown. So they definitely want to end out a bank. I'm going to go ahead. You want to make a prediction? I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to say the Revs win this one 2-0.
I do. I was going to say 2-1. Because okay. I don't believe we're capable of a clean sheet.
That's a good point. I retract my earlier statement. I'm going to say 2-1. No, I'm going to go. I think they're going to be fired up to keep a clean sheet.
I'll go with a Ryan Guy goal and a Alshowery goal. That's
I like those picks. I could live with that. I think Caraglio is going to get on the score sheet this weekend.
That would be very nice too.
I think he's going to get on. Maybe I think he's going to get on early, and who knows? It could be a 4-0 blowout. Who knows? Kevin Alston will get his first goal in the Revs league game. He has scored in the Superliga before, but not in a league game. So
that's special.
Yeah, that would be nice for him. Anyway, but Peter, I want to thank you for coming on. If you guys want to follow Peter on Twitter, it's the Third Kit.
At the Third Kit. The website is thirdkit.com.
Right, right. And absolutely. So thanks again. And for this show, if you're hearing this for the first time, it's at TMR Podcast on Twitter. It's revsmidnightride@gmail.com for the emails. And please send us your emails. And I should say that on Saturday, October 15th, I will be providing free beer to anybody who's over the age of 21 who has sent in an email to this show. So if you're listening and you want free beer on October 15th at the Crew game, send me an email. I'll read it on the show, and we'll have some free beer together. How's that sound?
It's a really cool thing what they're doing over there, the free beer movement, isn't it?
I love it. I love it. And I'm proud to I have a little clip from them that I play on every show, so I'm proud to support that. So definitely check that out. And then lastly but not least, of course, the blog for this show is revsmidnightride.blogspot.com. It's the Midnight Ride. Next episode is episode number 50. I hope to have some maybe an hour long show or something along those lines. And hopefully we can get some good participation in on that. But, you know, Peter, you're always welcome to come back on anytime you feel like you want to talk Revs. Love to have you.
And, thanks so much, Hank.
It was a pleasure. And so everybody else, make sure you tune in next week for the 50th episode of The Midnight Ride. And make sure you subscribe on iTunes as well. Thanks again. We'll catch you guys next week. Cheers.